All right, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you for coming. This is the third in a series of classes that are designed to kind of unpack some of the jargon that we use in the missions ministry world that often doesn't communicate real well. So the theme this week is the question, may I ask a stupid question? What do you mean by? And the first day we talked about missional and mission. And then yesterday we talked about discipleship and discipling. What does that mean? And today we're talking about holistic and sustainable. And these are all buzzwords that are used kind of among insiders. And jargon is really helpful at times to create shortcuts. We create new words to explain what we're doing so that, you know, we don't have to explain so much and kind of grab complex concepts and put them into simple words. But the problem with that, as we talked about the other 2 days, is it can kind of create a barrier between insiders and specialists and then the general public who aren't given all of their time to working in a certain area. And that can kind of create an elitism and a barrier. But it also kind of creates a barrier among insiders because we assume, because we're all using the same language, we're thinking the same things. And then a lot of people start picking up these words and start using them. And you're moving down the road together and you find out we're really not on the same page at all. We're just using the same language. So let's kind of unpack some of these words. Well, we've done that with missional, we've done that with disciple, and today we want to talk about holistic and sustainable. And these words maybe don't have as much general appeal if you're not in a specialist world of missions, but in the missions world, these are two really big buzzwords. We want to do holistic missions. We want to do sustainable missions. Well, what does that mean? And today we have talking to us Bobby Moore, who is Vice President at Christian Relief Fund, and Greg Williams, who's Facilitator for Sustainable Missions at Missions Resource Network. And we're actually doing this work together. Greg came aboard our staff back in October in partnership with Healing Hands International and Christian Relief Fund, helping them find ways to work together and then also finding ways to do that increasingly are resource sustainable in that region. We're not under the illusion that, you know, within a short period of time, this is all going to be self-funded in these countries. But increasingly finding ways to develop the economic engines and the resource engines locally so that it's not totally dependent on outside money and so that there's greater local control, greater local initiative, greater local ownership and dignity as well. And so we're very grateful at MRN for the partnership with Healing Hands, Christian Relief Fund, and the North Atlanta Church and other partners who's made that possible. So anyway, these guys are the experts. They live in this world. They think about this all the time. And I'm going to play the devil's advocate. And all week long, I've kind of been the irritating guy who's pushing back and creating problems. And this is my spiritual gift. It's what I do bestest. I'm going to be a little tough on these guys. And when I sent the questions, Bobby's like, you are really trying to get me in trouble, aren't you? I'm like, no, I'm really trying to clarify what we're doing and justify what we're doing in our own minds. And even if this is an internal conversation for the most part, I think it's a conversation we need to have. And I'm a great advocate for holistic missions, sustainable missions, and I could just lecture you about why I am, but I think better to pose these guys, questions these guys who know more. So let's jump in. The words holistic and the word sustainable are not in the Bible. They're fairly new, even in religious circles, and they seem to be a reaction to other things. Nobody says, let's do holistic missions without comparing it to what other people have been doing or what we've been doing in the past. Nobody says, let's do sustainable missions without comparing it to what it was. So what do these words mean? What are we talking about when we use the word holistic or sustainable?
Well, I think they are a reaction to what people perceive to be not holistic or not sustainable. In terms of holistic, it's people are reacting perhaps to maybe one organization focused on preaching and planting churches, and they're focused on the spiritual aspect of man, in trying to make connections with God and man, but not addressing things that are going on in those communities where they're preaching. Maybe there's a poverty issue, people are hungry, or there's medical issues, and not addressing those. And then another organization may go in and see, well, we're working on our emphasis on medical, and we see people that are in great medical need, that people are dying from diseases, and they focus on that. And they may say, well, that we do it, we're doing this in the name of Jesus Christ, and we're sharing his love, but then the message never gets out. So that's part of, I think, the reaction in terms of holistic is saying, well, who is man? How did God create us? What are all of man's needs? What are the relationships that are broken? And do we deal with one of them, or do we deal with all of them? So that's, I think, part of the reaction to the holistic. Holistic would be, say, let's deal with the whole man, all of his needs, not just one aspect of it. Sustainability has lots of meanings, depending on your perspective, I think. And one would be, well, if you have a ministry, is it sustaining itself? Can it go on financially? It's a big focus. Can it fund itself? Can it continue to go on as a ministry? But then if you look at, say, a church, is it sustainable? What's the American missionaries or organizations sponsoring them financially? Once they leave, or the missionaries leave, will it continue to function as an organization? Does it have the resources to fund its own ministries? And will it then replicate itself? So there's different levels of sustainability that you can look at.
Yeah, and I think for me, holistic, the thing that basically when people say holistic, at least in my book, what I'm thinking of is I'm looking at man, and man has a broken relationship with himself, he's got a broken relationship with others, and he's got a broken relationship with God. And so basically, you take a holistic approach to address all of those. Because if you focus on one area specific, what happens is they're still going to be broken in two other areas. So if you focus solely on their spiritual, they're still going to be broken in their relationship with man. And while that can grow and take care of that, you've got to address the brokenness of man in those three areas. And so the holistic approach, I would say it is in the Bible. If you look at the way Jesus did ministry, when he was at the well and he spoke to the lady at the well, I mean, that was opening up a conversation with water, and then it goes into a whole spiritual conversation. I think where a lot of pushback comes back on holistic ministry is we do have different ministries that are narrowly focused in specific areas. The problem is when we go into one area and think it's our own area, instead of finding out who's gifted in a different part that we can partner with. So World Bible School is very gifted at doing evangelism through mailings. You know, CRF is very gifted at getting kids educated and giving them nutrition. You know, Healing Hands is very gifted in farming techniques. And so what we've got to do is find areas where, instead of trying to compete with each other, we say, hey, look, this is your giftedness. This is what you're good at. And the whole approach we're trying to touch here is we're trying to help these people in these three areas, get them better relationships person to person, help them, you know, with their personal spiritual self-development, and then also in their spiritual walk as well. And so who's bringing the best to the table? And that's who you want to kind of to partner with. And so where I think the problem comes is we as NGOs not willing to give up some of our own territory to allow somebody else who's better at us in a certain area to come in and help run the ball further down the field. And so I think when you think holistically, you need to say, okay, what am I gifted at? What has God given us the blessings to do? And who do I know that I trust and partner with that I can bring them in to answer the whole approach to that? So that Go ahead.
I would just agree with Bobby. I would say that there's really, I would add a fourth area, God and man, God himself, God and his neighbor, but also God and the rest of creation, which is, take man's physical needs.
When you go there, that's where you can go to start talking about self-sustainability, and you can realize that in self-sustainability, the world is a broken place. I mean, we can take you to some places in Kenya that, when you walk there, there's just, you sit and you look, and there's really no hope. I mean, so we're up there drilling water wells, and we bring Healing Hands in and say, okay, you guys figure out how to grow vegetables in the desert. And so, there's times where, and that's where, to my answer on self-sustaining, there are some areas. Self-sustainability is kind of you can define that 100 different ways. Mm-hmm. And so my definition of self-sustainability is you want to give people the opportunity to give something back. And so instead of us going in as North Americans into an area and saying to them, this is how you're going to fix your problem, sitting down with them and saying, here, what are the problems as you see them, and then what are your solutions? So if you had any ability to fix this, how would you fix it? And allow them to do that, because right then and there you give them self-worth again. What happens so many times is we go in and we take away their self-worth and we devalue the people by telling them, look, I'm going to fix your problem, and that's just not, that's not healthy. And so, but, some people want self-sustainability to make it fund everything for itself. Well, if that's the case, look at our Christian schools in the United States. They're not self-sufficient, right? They have some self-sufficiency to them, but they still do fundraising. Look at most of our NGOs, those are not self-sufficient. They're relying on getting out and talking to donors and things like that. There are ways to create self-sufficiency. And when I talk about self-sufficiency, I'm talking about bringing value to the person that I'm working with instead of creating them to a mindset of beggar mentality.
When you use the word self-sufficiency, my spidey sense starts to tingle. And I'm like, oh, I got flags waving, I got horns going off. Self-sufficiency, what are you talking about? This is another form of legalism, and we're telling the people you got to earn your own way. And I mean, freely you have received, freely you should give, right? I mean, this is a grace-based thing. Well, are we not just basically loading people up with additional burdens? I mean, we're so wealthy, they're so needy, and you're going to say, oh, you got to be sufficient yourself. How does that work in a grace world led by God?
Well, I mean, if we're going to proof text like that, then I'm going to go 2 Thessalonians, where it says, those who don't work, don't eat. And, how do you address that? And, I mean, in that whole section in 2 Thessalonians, it talks about where Paul says, we had the right to ask of you. We had the right to ask you to feed us, but we didn't do that. We worked so that we could be an example to you. And so I don't think, they're in self-sufficiency, your spidey tingles should go off. But the thing about it is I was in 2 weeks ago, I was in Romania. And I walked into a place where, we're helping feed about 500 different special needs kids. And I walk into this place. And, there was one little boy, and all he was doing was just looking at the ground and just twiddling his lip like this the entire time. There's no way this child is going to be self-sufficient. There's no way. But God calls us to still make an impact in that person's life. And so every ministry is not going to be self-sufficient. There are times where you're going to just go in and do relief and do it because, that kid's not going to grow up and be a church leader. We're not going to invest in that kid and he's going to grow up and be a church leader. He can't even speak his name. And some of these kids, on their birth certificate, it's blank. They don't have a mother or a father because they were just left. And so those types of things will take place. And that's where you go into freely give, or the poor will be with you always. Those are the type things where you know, we're going to have to address those types of deals. But there's also people who are willing to work. When the Philippines, when the typhoon took place and everybody started driving out and every organization was passing out food, and then, you know, the government was passing out food because government money came in. Well, then all these people had work available. They could go out and cut trees. They were needing to rebuild. People were trying to hire people. And the workers would not work because the people were still driving up and down the streets passing out food. And so they were saying, why am I going to do that? And so that, in turn, we create a false reality of hope for those people that every day we're going to come by and just start passing out food, when in reality that money eventually dries up. And so, yes, we are called to freely give in some areas, and we will always have the poor with us. But at the same time, there are people who are able to work, and there are opportunities to put them in place.
Preparing to do this job, one of the things I wanted to look at is what did Jesus do? And so I took a look at in the Gospels, every instant where Jesus gave something or helped somebody physically. And I want to see if there was any indication there that he qualified them in some way or that he held back from his giving. And I couldn't find a single incident in terms of giving, helping people with physical needs or demon possession. There didn't even have to be faith or very little faith on the part of the person receiving to receive his blessings. So I do believe that we're called, as his example, to give. But then when you start looking at Jesus and his discipling of people and the other requests that were made in terms of helping them develop as spiritual people, then they did make demands of him that he held back on, that he redirected the way he did it. So I think when we talk about sustainability, it's not a question of whether to give or not to give. It's a question of how to give and what is the real need and how do we meet that need. And so sometimes the immediate need is a child needs shelter or needs food or the adult needs medical attention. No matter how much you talk about the good news, if the noise of the person's stomach is louder than the voice of the message, it's not going to be good news. So sometimes those things have to be addressed. But you have to get at what is the root issue and what is the greater cause. And I think we have to be careful when we think about sustainability and holistic words, is that what is the end goal of that? Is it just to try to help people have the food they need to eat or have the help they need to have? Or are we trying to get to something greater in the kingdom of God than that?
I think you're both making some really important distinctions that it's one thing to do relief for people who are in helpless and hopeless situations. But if you just do relief and you're not doing ongoing development, you may in the long run not be helping so much. So how do you move from a right stage appropriate measure? You know, at this stage, we just need to give. But then if we're going to help these people develop in everything God calls them to be, eventually they've got to cycle back around. That sounds good. I love that. That's helpful. But, you know, part of the pushback that comes too, and I ask this question too, is where's the gospel in all this? You know, it sounds to some degree like we're really just talking about humanitarian projects. And is this to some degree a smokescreen for people who've lost confidence in the gospel and the importance of the gospel? And now we're just switching to doing physical things and doing good that's tangible because we don't really think preaching the gospel helps people that much. So we're going to do things that from a secular point of view we can see help. Is that in any way a faithful critique? Or have we lost confidence in the power of the gospel and now we're just doing humanitarian stuff?
Well, there are a lot of organizations in the world, Christian and non-Christian organizations, that are doing a lot of great community development work in the world. It's making a difference in how people live. But I didn't get into this area because that was my primary interest. I got into this interest because I was looking at churches that were being planted by Westerners, North Americans, that were being financially supported and other ways supported, and what I was seeing is a lot of dependency issues that they were being dependent upon the Westerners that were providing. And what I was also seeing was that the churches were oftentimes not growing. And when the Westerners left, the missionaries left, that's where the church plateaued. And that's not what I see in the book of Acts. And so why is that the case? And so what I began discovering is that we were helping create anemic churches, spiritually and maturity anemic churches that were so dependent upon the line of resources that were coming from the U.S. that they failed to see the resources in their own hands. They failed to see the resources that God had given them in their own community, and they had not enough initiative to help develop them. And they tended to become irrelevant culturally to their own environment. So that sent me on a search for a long time to figure out what's the answer to that. And so the goal for me is not, in my area of work, is not to help people necessarily. The end goal is not to have food or not even to have the physical, financial resources that are available or to develop them. But the end goal is to help them mature as a church, as a family of God, so they can do the mission of God. And I think we have to keep that at the forefront of why we're in these helping modes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a lot of great NGO, nonprofit organizations that are secular that are doing great humanitarian work. I don't think what the church and Christian NGOs are doing is a reaction to the spreading of the gospel isn't working. But it's almost, to me, it's a reaction to some of the North American Superman complex that we've gotten into before, where we would try to go and plant North American churches in these other countries. And then what happens is, when, like Greg alluded to, you know, when the North Americans leave, they don't raise up the leadership, because what they want to do is they need the papacy of it. I mean, they need to be the Pope and be seen as, look what I've done, look what I've started. And I mean, I've even worked with churches, and this is even a local leader, to where an organization was giving them money to give food out on Saturday to those in need. Well, this guy would choose the people who would get food, and basically it was, you show up to church and you'll be put on the list to receive a bag of rice. And so, I mean, we've heard the term rice Christians, and so a lot of that's kind of, you know, we build up our numbers because he needs to continue to get that North American money flowing in, and so he boosts his numbers to say, look, I have 200, 300 people coming to church, and I'm just giving them a bag of rice. Well, you know, Sunday they're coming to church because of this group, and then on Monday they're going to go visit this other church because they're passing out rice on Monday. And so I think what happens is, this isn't a reaction to, I don't think it's a reaction to the gospel not working. I think this is how we've made messes of some areas. And I'm not saying all of them are that way. I'm just saying we have seen some areas where we've gone in and not done a healthy job of it. And this allows us a healthy opportunity to spread the gospel, open the door. But again, it goes back to, you've got to use the local church and the local leaders in that community to drive and develop.
Okay, I've got one question that for me may be the toughest question that I wrestle with in this area.
We'll let you answer it then.
Hey, it's a question. I think this is where we're at the greatest risk to me. Are we not at risk of exporting our materialistic Western values when we start down this road and just trying to turn the rest of the world into the same kind of materialistic, money-focused kind of people that we are when we start talking sustainability? Are we operating out of kingdom values, or are we operating out of Western values when we do that?
Absolutely not. again, I think you need to redefine, if that's your question, you need to redefine your definition of self-sustainability. Because the concept of self-sustainability isn't about making money. It's about how do I live, like the Bible says, you know, give us this bread for today. How do I get that when there's no hope for that? Because here's a prime example of that. In Cuba, we did some work there in Cuba with a farm that was like a 30-acre farm. Well, they ended up growing their own vegetables, their potatoes, and all of that kind of thing. And they became self-sufficient as a church to be able to feed their own community from that farm. There was no capitalism in that. But that self-sufficiently helped that church to be a better place. I think the question is not how do I create an opportunity for them to pay for themselves. What happens is we kind of get into the mindset of, okay, I'm going to help these people get better. In these other countries, they're going to no longer have a dirt floor. Then they're going to get an air conditioner. Then they're going to get a car. That's not what they want. That's not what they're searching for. You know, they're wanting opportunities to be able to provide food for their children so they don't have to tell their babies to lay on their stomach to help the stomach cramps go away. That's what self-sustainability is helping them become that. Francis told a story yesterday in the class he talked about a kid that wasn't sponsored, and as he got older, Milton actually sponsored this kid, and he ended up going to a technical school and learned how to work on cars. And so he was able to work on cars, while at the same time he also went to Bible college and learned how to be an evangelist. And so he's working on people's cars, having conversations with them about Jesus. That's self-sufficiency. I mean, that's what it is. And it's not a let's take capitalism in. It's how do we help them create opportunities in the world they live in to provide hope for their children.
I'm going to agree and disagree with that.
Absolutely.
I think we are much at risk at exporting our capitalistic, materialistic North American viewpoint as we try to do this. If we go with that mindset and don't have a bigger kingdom view in mind of what we're doing, and if we're not, and I think this is what Bobby is saying, if we're not listening to the people that we're serving. If we go in with a plan, it's going to be a North American plan because that's the way we think. That's what we know. But if we go in, and if we go in, I think, with the mindset that we're going to fix their problems, that in itself, I think, is a dangerous zone. Because we don't really know their problems, and it's a negative viewpoint. If we go in with a viewpoint that we're coming here to partner with you, and we're coming in to help you explore what the possibilities are, not what your problems are, it changes the focus altogether. And so our tendency is to say, we see a problem, or they come to us with a problem, but I think the emphasis should be on what are the resources that you have, and what do you see that God wants for you in your community? What is God calling you to, and how can you match those resources with what God is calling you to? That helps them develop their sustainability within their local context, their local culture, and what God is calling them to. Yes, there'll be needs, and they're going to come out pretty quickly, and they have to be addressed. But if we focus on what the possibilities are and help them develop. And then part of that also is, I think, we see, all people, I think, see the resources that are in our hands. That's what we have control of. That's what we know we can do something with. And but God has called us all to a mission, and it's a big mission, isn't it? But it's a mission that He wants to fully supply all the resources for. They all belong to Him. So the resources are not just the resources that are in our hands, but the resources that are in our community, within our hands, within the church, within that church's community, and then within their broader country or regional context community, and then within the global community. So I think we have to think, you know, what are the things that are in hand first, and how can they be developed? How are things that God wants to unlock in the local community, and then how can we partner from the global community?
Those are really helpful answers. You guys are answering these questions well. But I want to open it up to the class, see what questions you may have. If you don't, I've got a bunch more. But I also want to recognize the fact we have three brothers here from Africa who know more about this than any of us do. And I'm very interested in hearing what they may have to say or questions they may have for us, as well as questions from the class. So let me open it up. Who has a question for the panel here, or has a comment or reflection? Yes, sir.
The topic of sustainability and holistic ministry is a very important one, and is very timely for the Kingdom of Christ, especially in the developing country. I'm a witness to this. In developing countries, we are all human beings like those in the developed country. You know, we all have our self-worth and self-dignity. So when you do mission work, you want to help in such a way that you don't take away our dignity. Mm-hmm. And so that is very, very important. If you, maybe because of poverty, we accept what you are giving to us, and you trade our dignity with what you are giving to us, well, we respect it. And when you leave, we will just say, go with it, it's just because we don't have. And so the church is not built up in that way. And so it is the right way. I will encourage every mission, every ministry to look onto sustainability. I can give you some examples that we have started in Kenya. I can just very one important partnership we have with the Ring Road Church of Christ in Kisumu, southern Kenya. This church is in the slum area. We have so many disadvantaged people and so many poor people. And they have a church mission, a committee. They set up. They came up with a proposal. They want to do sugarcane project. And they came up with a proposal. If you help us to give us a startup fund, we are going to do this, and they're going to do the project. They're going to get profit. They will pay you back this money, as they won't even want you to give them this money as a loan. And that is sustainable. You are not just giving out the money. They are asking you, give us this money as a loan. And we are going to pay. They came up with the way, the plans that they are going to pay back. They are going to pay back in three years' time. And they show you all the ways, the steps they are going to take. All we need you to do, okay, you have the expertise. Okay, now I'm an agriculturalist. Then we work with humanitarian group. The Americans, okay, give us this money and give us some expertise. Guide us through these stages. Okay, this money, when you bring this money, don't give us all, because we know in Africa we have so many needs and things can happen. Okay, at every stage of this project, you give us this money, we do this project, this activity, we give you the report, and we ask for another stage, maybe for renting of the land. You give us the money, we rent, and we give you the evidence, plowing the soil, we tell you how much it costs, you give us the money, and we give you the report, sowing the seedlings, and all these stages. And so there is a factory that will buy this sugarcane from them, they will get their profit, and they will pay you maybe 40% of your initial investment. They will get the project and reinvest. So this is sustainability, and the people feel they are doing it, they are helping themselves. Just imagine doing this over 10 years. They wouldn't need any money from other people. And that can be created in other congregations and even villages. And so I think it's very, very important that we look at sustainability. And then this is a church committee. The church members are the ones working in this farm. They are gaining something for themselves. They pay them, they get, at the end of the day, they're able to feed themselves, create employment. And then the people in the surrounding, their neighbors are seeing what the church is doing. Those who are not even members of the church, they will want to be part of that church. You know, so this is a typical example, and it's very, very important. And I think that is the best way to go.
Francis is Kenyan, and Kenyan are British culture, so he won't take the floor unless it's kind of handed to him. But Francis and I had this conversation yesterday. He saw that I was reading a book called Toxic Charity, and he was like, how is it wrong when you're just helping somebody who's bitten on the side of the road? And he said, how does that, you know, hurt someone? And I said, it doesn't when you do it that day. But I said, what happens when every day that person is sitting by that road and you're coming by expecting to give him something every day and he's just waiting? He becomes dependent on you. And so I thought Francis had a great response, as he kind of had an aha moment of, oh, I kind of understand that. So Francis, we'll give you the floor.
Thank you. My perspective is, surely there is cons and cons of the humanitarian. But to my view, as I was sharing with Bobby, is that there is more pros than cons. And in this case, with sustainability, what I see the most important thing is training. Mm-hmm. Training people, because there are a lot of people who does not have information.
Right.
Like, I did not have that information, surely, correctly. But when people have the information, then they have the power. Because information is power. For example, what CRF is doing with us is that in every month we have 10 centers. And we know for sure that there are a lot of needs with all these people. But we knew, and we know that we cannot really help everybody, those who are hungry, those who are good, and those who are sick. But what we do is that we go to every center once a month and call everybody, those who don't participate with us, the government leaders, and we take those people, we go with those people who are expertise in different fields. And they teach about health. And there are some, we understood that there are a lot of small things that people don't understand. For example, deworming. For example, deworming medicine is very cheap. But the people did not know, some children get sick and you see they have a big bellies. And they did not know that it is just worms. And they can buy 5 shillings. For deworming medicine. So when we tell them, we teach them about agriculture, we teach these people. Some people have farms, but they don't know where to start from. Once CRF starts, we give them some startup to start farming. Then later, next year, they have food and they have capital and they continue. We have seen a lot. For over 5 years, people have become self-sustainable. So what I see here is training, the first thing. When you come there, you give them information first before giving them any loans or grants or something. You tell them that you can do this. You can do this. Because if you say that American view is coming to destroy the cultural values of Kenya, I don't agree with that 100%. Because there are good things in America. There are good things with American people. And most of the developing countries would like to reach where America as rich right now. And they are also taking a lot of good things from you. So when you tell them about the modern technology in farming, they'll think about that. They'll want to practice that. And if you help them that way, investing in modern technology, they will be sustainable. They will work on that. So, for example, what we are doing with the children, the university students, we are seeing also self-sustainability in this side, because we have about 30 children in the university. And I am sure that I have meetings with these children, and I tell them that when you finish your university, I'm sure, because a graduate in Kenya will likely get a job. When you finish university, you must come and sponsor a child and participate in what we are doing. So in future, we'll be having 10, 30 investors, 30 sponsors from Kenya. Is that not self-sustainability?
Mm-hmm. Very good. That is helpful.
Thank you.
Vrada.
Talking about holistic and sustainability, if we look at Genesis 39, here is Joseph sold into slavery. In Egyptian market, he had no connection, no educational background, no bank account. But if you read verse 2, God sees him or describes him as a man of success. Why? Not what he had, but who he had. Mm-hmm. Because God was with him, because he knew God, he was a man of success, even at that point in time. No wonder eventually we saw Joseph from the grass to grace. He reached a point that, yes, around him everything was obvious that he was a successful person. God looks at us, that he has created us, and ours is to believe in him, trust in him, put our everything in God. Imagine back home in Ghana, I am involved in deaf program. Way back since 1994, we have been fellowshipping with the deaf, and by God's grace, a lot of them are being converted to Christ. This thing in my hand is a deaf school in Ghana that they are trained to make things like this. We have here something like beads that these students, they are able to fix. So the church have come to realize that whilst giving them the gospel, why can't we find a way to sustain them by setting up a workshop that after graduation from school, where they go to learn this kind of business. Some are carpenters, some are masons, some are welders, beauticians, seamstress, and whatnot. Why can't we put them together because of the language barrier and provide them with tools, find contracts for them so that they will be self-sufficient? And being holistic has to do with, as our panel members were discussing, taking care of the spiritual needs of a man, the physical needs, the emotional needs. That is to say, you are being holistic. You are addressing all these needs. And the principle is scriptural. When God calls you, because he is God of peace, Jesus Christ said, Shalom. In Greek, peace means you have peace in your finances, you have peace in your health, you have peace and order. That is being holistic. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy that we have groups, Healing Hands and this mission network and all those groups coming together as one body to address issues like this. Our prayer is that as we send the gospel to people, they come to know Christ, we also give them tools to work with so that they will be self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. And I think what you've said kind of summarizes what we're talking about. You cannot love part of a person.
you can't segment a person off and say, I love your spirit, I don't care about your body, your family, the justice of your society, the country you live in, I don't care about any of that. I just want to save your soul, so when the rest of this worthless stuff burns up, your soul goes somewhere. I don't know of anywhere outside of the West where people even think like that. That's disease thinking that goes back to the Greeks who tried to separate body and matter, and body and spirit, and say, well, you can do spiritual salvation without dealing with whole people and their families and their cultures and their societies. And one of the things I love about getting involved in cross-cultural missions is we find out how ignorant we are and some of the ways that we think that they just don't make sense in other contexts. And I think that's what really sustainable and holistic missions get us into, in the sense that, you know, as Americans, where we have a lot of money in our culture, we become arrogant. We think we have more than we do. We think we know more than we do. And we drop down in a part of the world that may not have the kind of wealth. All we see is what they don't have. Well, they don't have this, they don't have this, they don't have this. And we don't realize what they do have. What are the strengths here that we're missing? And when we work together in these ways, what we find out is that we're learning about our inadequacies and we're benefiting as much from the partnership. We're sharing from our strengths, other people share from their strengths, and together we're becoming more fully rounded as people of God. And, I think that recognizing we can't love part of people, and God isn't just trying to snatch off disembodied souls to stick in some nirvana somewhere. He cares about people and their bodies. That's why there's resurrection. That's why there's a new earth as well as a new heaven coming. We got to love people, their context, the world they live in. God wants it all to be good. He's going to restore it all. And if we don't think like that, I think we're in real trouble. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming. This is an ongoing conversation. I think as much as anything, it's important for people that we're trying to connect with and work with to know we're asking ourselves these hard questions. As we move down this road together with Healing Hands and Christian Relief Fund and MRN and other ministries that we're drawing in, we're making ourselves wrestle with the hard questions. We're questioning our own values. We have to answer before God for what we're doing. We're trying to listen to Him. We're trying to listen to international partners. And we welcome the hard questions because we want to make sure that we're on track. And it's not like we come to an answer and then we just move forward. We're constantly seeking and growing. We're just failing forward in the right direction till we find a way through. And we see that God can do far more than we ever imagined. Please pray for us in this work, and thank you for being here. Bert?
I'm just going to say I want to thank you guys for bringing in our African brethren, because we could sit here and talk about this among us, white North Americans, and we'd have this one-sided conversation, but to hear them talk about it, it adds so much more to the things that we're trying to do, so thanks for bringing everybody in there.
All right, we're a couple minutes over time, and since we are in North America and very time conscious, we're gonna respect that, but that doesn't mean the conversation needs to end. If you want to continue talking, please feel free to do so. Contact any one of us. Really appreciate Bobby and Greg for being willing to engage this and answer the hard questions. And CRF has a bunch of materials out here they would love to give you to let you know what they're doing. So, Bobby, did you want to say anything? All right. God bless you. Thanks for coming.